92.9 FM, 680 AM, and 92.9ESPN.com. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
I said, where you going with that gun in your hand? I'm going out to shoot my old lady. You know I caught her messing around with another man.
Let's do this Chris Harrington deal.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That was It's Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix, his breakthrough single back in 1967. In reference to Joakim Noah. It's only Joe song I could really come up with. It was an ode to Billy Joe. Joakim Noah likely to sign, I think, with the Grizzlies today. Obviously, the content of that song has nothing to do with Joakim Noah, but it's a song called Hey Joe. So there you go.
Yeah, in your piece, I've tweeted it out. You wrote about Jaren Jackson Jr., which we'll get to in a minute, but also there was a photo of you captured a tweet that had a photo of Joakim Noah actually in Memphis. And so he does appear to be here, physical, et cetera, and then this will be announced, you think, as early as today.
I was told this morning that nothing has changed from the trajectory, you know, that's been in place since the end of last week, which was he would be in town early this week, do his physical, sign a contract, and, you know, might be active, you know, whether he plays or not, who knows, but might be active for Wednesday. And I was told that that trajectory at this point, at this moment, has not changed. So I think there's a good chance that there'll be some official thing later today.
All right. We mentioned, and the piece is, again, it's up at dailymemphian.com. We talked a little bit yesterday about how, about that you were going to take a deeper dive into what Jaren Jackson Jr. has accomplished relative to other rookies. Other rookies who turned out to be tremendous players. What you found was fairly staggering. Or as you said, you wondered whether people were fainting yet in the course of reading this, because it's fairly it is fairly staggering. Take us through some of it.
Yeah, on the offensive end in particular. I mean, I compared him to five other players. I decided to take players who were similar positionally to him. Because you just do, like, stat searches, you'll turn up, like, David Robinson and Hakeem Olajuwon. I don't think his ultimate position may be center because of the way the league's changing, but he is not a true center the way those guys are. And, like, Andre Kirilenko comes up because of the steal of block numbers, but Kirilenko was more of a combo forward, a 4-3. So I looked at players who really fit him, his physical makeup and his positional makeup. And so The five players I compared him to were at the tippy top end, Kevin Garnett and Anthony Davis, who are all time greats. In the middle realm, perennial all stars, Pau Gasol and Rasheed Wallace. And then a little bit lower end, the elite role player, Serge Ibaka. Those are all players who are sort of 4-5s, guys who can play power forward or center, who all came into the league young, two of them at 19, one at 20, and two at 21. And sort of, you know, that's the group of comparisons I used. And I went through a lot of different stats in terms of comparing their rookie years to Jaren Jackson's rookie year so far. And it comes out really well in this. And what's especially shocking is on the offensive end, that his scoring relative to playing time and relative to the pace of the game is actually the best of any of these players as rookies. His shooting is the best of any of these players as rookies. And he ranked pretty well, better than I expected in some secondary offensive categories like assists and free throws. Like he's not passing the ball at the level of Pau Gasol and Kevin Garnett as rookies, who were two of the best passing big men of their generation. But he's right there with Rasheed Wallace and ahead of actually Rasheed Wallace and Anthony Davis. He's getting to the line, you know, not as well as Gasol and Garnett did, but better than Rasheed Wallace and Anthony Davis did. And then on the defensive end, other than rebounding, he profiles as basically the best of the bunch. You know, the demerits on him are he's closer to the bottom of that list as a rebounder, as a rookie. He's more middle of the pack as a passer. He's at the top of the list in terms of foul rate. He fouls more than those guys. And so there are some chinks in the armor. But the fact that you throw his rookie year so far in with those players, and the only one who's clearly better statistically, I'm not sure how clear it is, the only one he would definitely rank ahead was probably Anthony Davis. He's right there in the Kevin Garnett, Pau Gasol, Rasheed Wallace kind of class so far as a rookie.
Well, it's first of all, who is and maybe you don't know the answer to this. Obviously, Garnett came in straight out of high school. Jackson did not. But are they roughly the same age?
I didn't get down to the right. day, but they were 19. Kevin Garnett, Anthony Davis, and Jaren Jackson all had their rookie seasons at age 19.
I got you. There's nobody clearly better than him. Honestly, people can go look at the numbers themselves. They're fascinating. At dailymemphian.com, I've tweeted it out. Points per 100 possession, he's number one. And then Davis number two, Jackson number three, Wallace number four, Garnett number five, Ibaka number six.
Now, Pau Gasol had a higher scoring average as a rookie,
right.
But that's because
he played more
minutes on a faster paced team.
Right.
And so I use the per 100 possessions to average out, the minutes and the pace of play.
True shooting percentage, he is first. Three pointers per 100 possessions, he is first. Free throw attempts, he is third. Assist percentage, as you point out, not as good as Gasol or Garnett, but third. Usage rate, first. Shot blocking percentage, first. Steal percentage, second. Defensive box score, plus minus, first. Really, the only real chink in the armor is defensive rebounding, where he is 5 out of 6, only better than Rasheed Wallace. And then fouls, where he is first.
Right. And the rebounding thing's interesting because that makes me think about the Rasheed Wallace comp, which I brought up in the preseason. I feel even better about this. Hopefully Jackson becomes a better rebounder. But Rasheed Wallace was never a rebounder. His highest rebounding average for his career was 8.2, right? And so, what I ended up with is maybe Jaren Jackson will be as good as Kevin Garnett or Anthony Davis. It's kind of hard to say that 20 games into a rookie season. But he looks to me like the evolutionary Rasheed Wallace, like the better Rasheed Wallace. And if that sounds meager to people, Rasheed Wallace was a four-time All-Star who was, a key player on a title team and could have been on two title teams if that Portland team stinks through. But he's got that combination of shot blocking, three-point shooting, and low-post game with some problems as a rebounder. But his upside as a scorer, as an impact defender, and in terms of his personality, is so much more solid than that. That if he becomes the better, more dynamic Rasheed Wallace, that's a perennial All-Star. And that is not the best case scenario.
You would not right now. If I offered you Rasheed Wallace's career or what's behind door number three, you would take what's behind door number three?
Yes.
It's absolutely staggering. Absolutely staggering. And by the way, this does, it's funny because I literally heard someone, I don't even know who it was, say, see, this proves you don't need to have the number one draft pick to, all this tanking stuff was nonsense because you don't need the number one draft pick because they got him at four.
Would you rather be watching Kevin Knox and Mikal Bridges right now?
That's the point. It proves just the opposite. it literally proves just, and it also, honestly, I think goes a long way towards when Chris Wallace at the draft night party said we wanted to stay in the top four, and people kind of rolled their eyes because, you weren't going to do it. I think he meant they wanted to stay in the top four.
No, sometimes you say stuff and you think it's spin, and it is spin, like a lot of the times it is. That was not spin, and I wrote about that in the preseason when I talked to him. John Hollinger, that was just a pure statement of belief. They felt like there was a clear top four in this draft, and that draft broke from that point, and they wanted to get one of those four players.
Would they have rather
had the first pick? Sure, but they felt like there was a four-player top tier, and they wanted to make sure they got one of those players.
And therefore, it was Ayton, Jackson, Doncic and Bagley. That's what we believe. Yeah, And they just wanted to stay in one of the top four. So they were happy. And absolutely, like, he is, it is funny how, and it's always, it's why the we're going to screw up the draft pick anyway, so why does it matter thing just always was infuriated me. Because the Golden State Warriors drafted badly for a long time. And then they started, and then they, Adonis Foyle or whatever. Like, just because you draft badly doesn't mean you will always draft badly. And your chances of drafting well are better, whether you're higher, even if you tend to draft badly.
So the funny thing is, like, I'm not going to tell you it doesn't matter who your management is, because it does.
Of course it does.
It matters a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you, like, Chris Wallace is the greatest GM ever, because he's not. But the reality is, if you're in a decision-making capacity for a long enough time, you're going to have a mixed resume.
Right.
And so, like, was drafting Hasheem Thabeet a fireable offense? Sure, could be. There's an argument to be made for that. Was signing Chandler Parsons to a max deal a fireable offense? Sure, could be. There's argument for that. But it's not shocking, like, to do those two things, which may have been fireable offenses, and then you stick around long enough, and then you draft Jaren Jackson with the fourth pick, and, like, you know, you trade a second-round pick for Garrett Temple, and, like, you do all this good stuff, right? It's like you don't know. You can put a probability on the future based on past results, but, like, really, decisions could go any which way, almost no matter who's making the decisions.
Right. Okay, moving on to the I'll save the Clippers talk till tomorrow. A few other things happened in the NBA. Fred Hoiberg got fired. Bulls were supposed to be good this year. Obviously, they have injury. What's your thoughts on the Bulls situation?
I didn't think the Bulls were supposed to be good this year. You know, maybe they did. They brought in Jabari Parker for a lot of money.
They thought they were going to be good this year, right?
Right. And so I'm not at all surprised by the Bulls' record. I have no idea whether Fred Hoiberg is a good coach or not. He has not demonstrated that he's a good coach, but he also has not had the opportunity, I don't think, to demonstrate that he's a good coach. But I think it's hard to stick with a guy, even if you never give him the chance to win, it's hard to stick with a guy for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years or whatever and keep losing and have the same guy. I mean, Philly stuck with Brett Brown, and good for them. But it's not surprising to me that at some point you try to shake it up from the coaching standpoint. So I don't necessarily think he deserved to get canned, but it was not at all surprising.
Nuggets go into Toronto and get a win.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a super impressive win, as we've seen having played Toronto recently. You know, having Toronto here in Memphis recently, I may write about this a little bit today. I'm sort of going to bounce around some topics related to the team, I think, depending on what, you know, people say at practice that is interesting or not. But I feel like Western Conference, there's sort of this game of Marco Polo that's happening in the Western Conference, and it may just keep happening most of the season, where, like, everyone has their little moment. So the Grizzlies had their little moment. You look up and, oh, look, the Grizzlies are in first place. And Portland had their moment.
Right.
And now Portland has slid back down. And now Denver right now is having their moment. And, like, you know, maybe in 2 weeks, like, New Orleans wins 5 in a row and they jump up. And I sort of feel like we may sort of bounce around for a while. You know, I think Golden State, if they get everybody healthy, and they're still not playing well, they've lost 6 of 10. But if they get all their four main guys healthy, I think Golden State will pop back up. And at some point, at least a couple of these teams are going to drift out of the mix. You know, the Clippers have had their moment. But I feel like we're going to have to play this little Marco Polo game for a while among these, you know, 10 different teams sort of battling for these spots.
It's interesting to me how long the teams that were expected to do good, to do well, but are now out of the playoff hunt, most people would have said that Houston, San Antonio, and Utah would be in the playoffs, and a lot would have said that New Orleans would be in the playoffs, and none right now currently are in the playoffs. I think that's true. None are currently would right now be in the playoffs. Which of those four will make the playoffs ultimately?
Which four?
Which of those four will ultimately make the Houston? The underachievers. Houston, Utah, so I don't know whether San Antonio is an underachiever or not. It's just we're not used to it.
Right.
And New Orleans. Which of those four will make the playoffs?
I at this point, and then they're going to have been 10 in a row because I say this, I pretty firmly do not believe in San Antonio this season. I'm out on San Antonio. Of the other three, you know, 3 weeks ago, I still thought Utah was going to be the second seed. And, like, now, I can't say that anymore. And, like, I think a week ago, I still believe Houston will also be the second seed. And now I'm starting to wonder if Chris Paul is turning the corner. Because Chris Paul is a small point guard who is old. He's, like, 34 or whatever. And he's been banged up. And I even wrote in the preseason, like, you know, his durability, like that's a reason to bet against them in the playoffs, is I don't know if he's going to hold up all the way through. But he's not been that great, and I sort of wonder if he's turning the corner a little bit age-wise. And if he is, Houston could have a problem because they don't have depth of talent like they used to. New Orleans is so thin, like, you know, they lost last night to the Clippers. It was a close game, but they were playing without Nikola Mirotic or Elfrid Payton. And when you only have six good players, like, it's hard to lose two of them. And so, you know, I think all those teams are sketchy, but I also think it's possible that any of them could get into a hot streak, you know, in the second half. Remember, Utah was sort of a mediocre team at this point last season.
Right.
And at post-All-Star break, they were, like, the best team in the league. And so I think those three teams all have the potential, if, like, everyone gets healthy and everyone clicks, to go on a big run. But I think what you see in the early season is they are vulnerable. It is legitimate vulnerability for all of those teams that they catch the wrong breaks, they could miss the playoffs. And so, you know, I would put San Antonio at the bottom because I don't think San Antonio has the big run in them. I don't think San Antonio can put it together and have their Marco Polo moment. I don't think that's coming from the Spurs. And so that would be the bottom of my list.
All right. We will talk to you tomorrow. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Jeff.